wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Davide. How are you?
Kia ora, Mili. I'm good.
Yeah.
Kia ora, Lou.
Kia ora.
Fantastic. So you've got some totally interesting topics. A wide range.
Yes, a wide range that spans from biology to linguistics this week. And let's start with a little bit of biology, and let's start with potholes, which is not exactly the holes you would be imagining, you know, like the ones in the middle of the streets, which are actually increasingly numerous. But it's about proteins and proteins that protect our DNA. So a POT in this case stands for a protection of telomerases. And telomeres are actually structures that are at the end of our chromosomes. So you know that chromosomes are these very well-packed. It's a group of genes as well as, you know, DNA and proteins that pack very well, and they contain all our genetic information. The problem is that when they end, they're very long, extremely long and extremely packed. When they end, there are junction of double-stranded DNA, which is the normal structure that DNA would be in, to single-stranded DNA. And of course, I mean, there are some other proteins that perceive sometimes these ends as damaged bits of DNA.
Oh, no.
which basically triggers these proteins to chop the ends a little bit. And there are several theories behind telomeres, which literally translate into parts that are far away, right? Telos means far. But basically what happens is that you keep losing bits of chromosomes as you get old. Mm-hmm. You keep losing bits of DNAs that get chopped from the end. From the ends of the chromosomes. So this group of researchers at the University of Michigan have studied these proteins, which is POT1, is part of this protection of telomerase telomerases. And it does have a structure. They have used X-ray crystallography to highlight the structure, to resolve the structure of the protein. And they've looked at it and they have discovered that it's got literally a pothole structure, in the sense that it has got a hole that can comprise the ends, you know, the junction between double-stranded and single-stranded DNA, and can protect it from the association of the other proteins that actually recognize it as a damaged bit of DNA. So it can literally prolong your life in a way, your genetic life, the life of the genes at the end of the chromosomes.
That's amazing. So they're like little heroes fending off the proteins that are trying to cut you.
Absolutely, pretty much that. So the implications, wow. The implications are huge, right? Because they challenge previous notions on how the chromosomes are structured and how the ends are structured, as well as they give us an understanding of how the protection mechanisms that are in the body in order to preserve these ends work, and possibly to tackle genetic mutations that would make these bindings either weaker or stronger and would shorten the chromosomes as you get old. So it's good for longevity, it's good for disease related to telomeric structures, let's say.
Right, so forget about living healthy and eating lots of berries and things, just protect your chromosomes.
Yeah, forget about it. I've never been a fan anyway.
So now you've got a really interesting one.
Let's talk about linguistics a little bit. And this is like a very recent paper that has come out on Science Advances, so a very high-up journal in a way, scientific journal. And this group of researchers at the Max Planck Institute, they have analyzed languages and the relation of languages and the evolution of languages with societies. In what context? So there is an underlying idea, which is sometimes even is politically pushed, that when you have a lot of non-native speaker in a society, your language in a way gets simplified, because usually people that don't speak the language, they are people that tend to simplify it, and this dilution then accumulates, and then the language gets more and more diluted. So they analyzed this, and they took as an example the Scandinavian countries, which included Iceland. And there's a big difference between Iceland and countries like Sweden, Norway, or Denmark, because Iceland is much more isolated. And they have a linguistic structure which is still case sensitive. So there are these cases, instead of using prepositions, what they do, they change the end of the word to say, to basically express belonging, right? And they have studied the differences between Swedish, Danish, and Norwegian with Icelandic, and also other languages. And they have analyzed something like 1,300 languages with words that were from the Grand Bank database.
Gosh, that's a lot to go through.
Yeah, they have very high throughput data, which is part of this, let's say, a very complex study, which tells you that you really have to have a lot of data in order to make claims, rather than politically riding the fact that foreigners are bad for your language, let's say. But the point being that they have divided societies into societies, like societies of intimates, which is like the Icelandic society, not many foreigners, and societies of strangers, which is societies where there is more foreigners that try to speak the native tongue, right, of the country they are in. Yeah. And they basically found out that it isn't true. So it is not, there is no correlation between having a society of strangers and having a language which is necessarily simplified, with the best example being German. German is a beautifully multicultural country these days. Mm-hmm. And the German spoken in Germany is not a simplified German just because there is a lot of foreigners in Germany. So a society of strangers does not correspond to a simplified language in any way.
Well, that's really interesting because you'd think that they'd simplify the language if there was a huge, you know, kind of diversity of people trying to speak one dialect. But yeah, now I think about it, Germany's a perfect example of that.
Yes, and it's just multiculturalism. It doesn't really affect language, at least not on short time scales. This might happen on very long time scales, but languages are particularly resilient to societal changes in the short time scale. That's basically what the study tells us. And it's a study that has been published on Science, I believe. So a very, very high up journal, highest.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see if they change really long time. And now we've got some new things. We've got a new enzyme.
Yeah, new enzyme. I mean, enzyme design, and we do a little bit of this in my research group. Enzyme design has been coming out as a very, very dramatic tool to change even environments, societies, industrial processes. And this is a study that caught my attention because it goes straight to the heart of pollution problems. And it goes towards improving aviation fuel with a biotechnological approach, which is mediated by an enzyme. And it's all sorts of fuel. There is this tendency of using biomass to produce fuel. And this is done, you know, sometimes ethanol is used to produce fuel, or anyway, lignin, which is part of like cellulose, is used to produce fuel. The problem is that the fuel that these processes normally produce cannot be used for aviation, because effectively aviation fuel cannot really contain that much oxygen. Because oxygen is bad for the components of the plane, and you risk to have good fuel, but you risk to actually dive into the, you know, you need to crash, which is not that good.
We do not want plane crashes here. We do not endorse plane crashes.
So what did this group of Brazilian researchers do was they identified the new enzyme, which is of bacterial origin. Rhodia nasimurium is called the bacterium. And this has got a particular ability to actually get rid of the oxygen from, say, products of fatty acid dehydrogenation, so it can get rid of the oxygen and can produce compounds which are at the basis of the chemical composition of fuel, but without oxygen. And this opens a huge opportunity for aviation fuel production, unlike everything else. And the biggest advantage of this is that if you replace now aviation fuel with these, you get rid also of all the nasty metallic compounds that are inside, you know, the metals that are inside aviation fuel, like nickel, cobalt, platinum, palladium, so all this nasty stuff that end up into the environment when you travel by plane, let's say.
Yeah, it's a huge pollutant. It's one of the biggest contributors is aviation travel. So that's amazing. So it makes the fuel more sustainable itself.
Effectively, yes. So you can produce fuel from biological means via biotechnological processes, and you end up with a product that is cleaner, potentially it's got the same performances, but without the ability to damage the aircraft, as well as without the nastiness of current aviation fuel.
All from a little bit enzyme, from bacteria.
Yeah, that's the future.
There is huge research in enzymes in the field.
Yeah, more is coming in that space. I mean, also thanks to AI, enzyme design is coming up as a very, very common thing. We will be able, I believe, to use enzymes that actually can digest plastics, can produce fuel, better fuel anyway.
Amazing. Well, now I feel less bad about flying in a private jet.
Yeah, no?
No, I'm just kidding. Well, thank you so much. So interesting, Davide.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you, Science. Thank you, MOTAT.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.